Oh snap, it's podcast time. Welcome to Just Chill Here. My bum is on the rail. Bum is on the rail. Look at me. My bum is on the rail. My bum is on the man. Bum is on the man. It's a lot of fun to put your bum on a man. My bum is on the step. Bum is on the step. Don't fall down the step. You might hurt your bum.
And that's not very fun. If you fall down and hurt your bum. I like to put my bum on things. It's fun for everyone.
Welcome everyone to the podcast. I'm John, and I'm joined by my compadre, mi amigo, muy Esteban Paquito Pucha, Michael.
I was expecting you to say Miguel.
Oh yeah, Miguel. Well, you know, I'm American, dude. I can't speak Spanish 100%, but 99%.
Through all that other Spanish in there.
Yeah, well, you know. I'm awesome, dude. Next week I might do it in Korean because I'm like the Rosetta Stone over here. I'm just fucking chilling, you know. Well, everyone, we got I'd say not a very long podcast because we are going to talk about Heroes of the Storm. It's really seeming like this podcast is a Heroes of the Storm podcast, but let me just be fair with you. I work a lot. Mike works a lot, and we have a hobby that is very similar. We like to play video games, and we're just going to talk about the game that we're playing at the time. Eventually, we'll probably burn out on Heroes of the Storm, and we'll eventually move back on to Diablo 3 or another game. Hell, we may go back to Titanfall. We haven't even said anything about that game. But if you're tired of hearing about Heroes of the Storm, just remember, when I post these podcasts on the webpage, I post a time of the recording, like, and I put all the category or all the topics we talk about with a timestamp, so you can just skip to the timestamp. So if we talk about some politics, you just skip on to that section, and you don't even have to hear about Heroes of the Storm. Talk about books, movies, whatever. And the reason why I put these topics on the article when I release the podcast is because I don't want anything to be mysterious. I want everyone to be able to find everything, and I want everyone to just be happy with the podcast. So let's say you're only interested in what we have to say about how shitty Bobby Jindal is as a governor, then we may only talk about for 5 minutes. If that 5 minutes of podcast that makes you happy, well then great. But don't be miserable and listen to the whole thing if you're completely disinterested in video games. We're actually going to start with Heroes of the Storm because we just spent the last 5 hours playing it, and we're doing the podcast at 1:03 a.m. It may not be the best podcast ever, but Mike, you said that when you listened to the last podcast that we both need to quit letting go of the damn push-to-talk button too early.
Yeah. Yeah, we tend to forget that. I went ahead and swapped back to push-to-talk again, too.
Yeah, I'm with my Tourette's and my noise-making. The shit even gets in when I'm pushing the button to talk. But, man, if I didn't have push-to-talk, it'd be people would stop listening because, you know, I make those loud noises and it hurts their ears.
They may just listen to it for comedic value, though.
We may do a all-out, just free-for-all talk, like, similar to, like, that Fight Companion podcast or something like that. Which, Joe Rogan doesn't edit his podcasts, so I wish I could do that.
We'll get there.
All right, Mike, so, like I said, we just spent the last 5 hours playing Heroes of the Storm, and I played as a few different characters trying to hit level 5 with everybody, trying to get that boost of gold, because my player levels are running out, and when my player levels run out, it's pretty much done. Getting gold is a pain in the ass after that. Do you think this is going to change? Do you think they're going to increase the way that we get gold in the game, or do you think they're going to leave it like that?
I'm really not sure. They made a lot of sweeping changes to the gold system with this last patch, but it seemed to hinge on other changes that came with the patch, so I don't know. I think it'll depend on if they stick with the current hero leveling system. And if they decide to add some other system back in that's similar to artifacts, similar gold sync, I think if they add something, they're going to have to do something with the gold game, because right now, once you hit level 40, it's ridiculously slow. And once you level all your heroes to level 5, you're only getting 40 gold a game and 200 gold a day on dailies. So they got to do something.
I think that they're going to make it where you can buy gold with money. I think buying gold with dollars is going to be a big central part of the game.
I don't think they'll do that. If they were going to do that, I think they would have done that with Hearthstone, which I guess Hearthstone's a little different, being as you can just buy card packs. But I think they want you to have to play the game to unlock certain things. I figure they'll keep it that way, especially if they add something in along the lines of artifacts where you have another gold sink. I think that they're not going to let you buy gold for that reason. Now, if they don't ever add any another gold sink, then maybe, I guess, it could be a possibility.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting concept. It's a different way to play video games. You know, it's been going on for a few years now with these companies making everything, you know, pay-as-you-go kind of thing. It's better than a monthly fee. It's better than paying full price for a game. You just get to play it how you want to play it. I like these games like that. But, I don't know. I kind of miss the solo campaign kind of stuff.
Well, Blizzard has been a pretty big advocate of being against pay-to-win. They tried to avoid it in Hearthstone. Because, yeah, you can buy card packs, but you can't buy cards. So you're still dealing with a random... You get random cards in your open packs. So I don't think they'll let you buy gold here, because that would be paying to win, especially if they add some gold sink in, and they let you buy gold. Then the people who can throw money down on gold automatically have an advantage. So I don't see them doing that. And if they don't add a gold sink, there wouldn't be no point in buying gold to begin with, because you'd only have characters to spend it on. And why not just buy the character?
Yeah. I'm at the Reddit page for Heroes of the Storm. And they have a thread that's like Full Rage Friday. And the top post for Full Rage Friday is a fucking Stitches, who the fuck designed that never dying piece of crap? Derp, derp, I'm just gonna run around dealing fuck tons of damage while healing at the same time and perfectly zoning everyone. Better buff Muradin. Do you agree?
When was this post made? That's very important.
Yesterday. It's just where people get to rage, they get to vent their frustrations about certain characters.
Yeah, I think it's just he's probably playing somebody who couldn't kill Stitches, but I mean, I've played games against the Stitches that I was like, holy hell, I just can't kill him. He's regenerating too fast, and he's got a lot of mobility. Once he takes sprint, he's hard to kill if he's got all his regen stuff going on. But yeah. at the end of the day, it really comes down to if he's regenerating hard, then your team has stood around and let him hit them with Devour a lot, and Devour has a long cooldown.
Here's one. This one reminds me of you. I'm so glad I get to spend an hour every morning idling practice matches to unlock the talents on all my heroes. I love talent gating. It's totally not a pointless waste of time at all. Also, my bot's lost a practice match. How does that even happen?
I saw a post on the main forums that was about that. A guy was asking, hey, does anybody else AFK in practice mode to get the level 4? And, a lot of people were like, hey, that's a good idea. Because apparently, if you're the person who makes the practice mode game, you can just stand still the whole game and you won't ever get booted out.
Diablo is so broken right now, and I've been yelled at for taking the broken talent. When I don't pick the broken talent, I get yelled at. I just want my Goron Master skin, not a philosophical debate about how one-shotting an enemy team is unethical. I don't know anything about Diablo being broken.
Yeah, I don't either. I haven't played with him a whole lot since this patch came out. I think maybe once. So I'm not sure what's broken about him.
I'm really tired of queuing against real teams playing displacement comps and team games when I'm playing gated tunes. I just want to unlock my talents on Zeratul with my goddamn friends, and I don't need to fight your Kerrigan, Brightwing, Stitches, Zagara, X comp. But that just sounds like a problem.
It's just a complaint against pre-mades, man.
Yeah, I guess... Get more friends. We're pathetic. We don't,
well, even that, even this code. Could, well, this could play into something that you mentioned earlier while we were playing. Is having an MMR for each individual tune. That way, when you do play a new character, say you have a really high win ratio with your character you're the best with, but then you go to play Zeratul, and he's level 1. Well, it throws you in games against people who are of the skill level of however your main character is. So now you're playing a gated tune against really high level players. So maybe the solution there is to have it be character based. And then you have to raise your MMR with each character. That way when you play a level 1 character, you'll be queued with lower, you know, people with a lower MMR. So it'll be a little bit easier on someone who has gated talent.
The next one is, what the hell is Abathur supposed to do? I've never played him because I don't even begin to understand what he's doing when he's on my team in game. What is going on in that bubble? And then there's a reply that said, he wiggles his noodles and people die. Thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, there's a, actually I read earlier, how is Abathur useful post on the main forums. And the guy's like, simple math shows that Abathur's shield and spike damage does way less than that of an actual hero. Also, Abathur practically cannot capture any objectives before level 10, and even if he reaches level 10, he only has 45 seconds to do it before the cooldown's up. And then they asked how people play Abathur. And the response, though, was in opposition to what he was saying. A lot of people were like, the strong thing about Abathur is that he can essentially help any hero anywhere on the map at any time. So anytime a hero's in a 1v1, Abathur can symbiote onto them and essentially make it a 1v1 and a half. And then they also go into the fact that once he hits level 16 or 17, he can merc by himself. And about how his strong... He's a strong lane pusher. If somebody plays him right and really pushes characters down one lane, they're like, a lot of times, Abathur can take... can really damage a lane pretty heavily because people aren't paying attention to the fact that he's symbioted on top of someone. Because I don't think if he has a symbiote on a creep, I don't think it shows up on the map that he's actually there, because he's still in the base.
If you see the you have to see the actual minions, and you'll see his little snake head thing. Can he symbiote on top of mercs?
As far as I know, he can symbiote on anything. But what I was meaning was on the mini map itself.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Here's one. If you have an escape talent, don't use it to dash away from your healer. Vala, you deserve to die. I would kill you if we had friendly fire. Oh, wait. No, I won't. Lili has less damage than a level 1 hero regens. I've done that. I've accidentally escaped from my healer. Another one of my favorite ones is when I put down some damage on the map that takes up a big area. And this dude that plays the Elite Tauren Chieftain comes in and does his little move, and he knocks them all out of that area. Thanks, ETC.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. But in reference to the first one, a lot of times, you don't know that that healer is going to actually heal you. So you tend to vault away.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, I've had a lot of times where a healer just ran by me. I'm like, hey, dude, I see you're half health, and I got full mana, but fuck you. That's annoying. That's really annoying, though. And I guess this will be the last one. The new garden map feels like a clusterfuck. It feels like there is too much going on, and plant horrors are almost useless. Dear Blizzard, do something about the map. Thanks. BB.
I don't know. I've seen some complaint posts about the map. Personally, I don't think the plants are useless. They do die a little fast, and you can't heal them like you can the Dragon Knight. I think it would be beneficial if you could heal the plant. But other than that, I don't think there's a whole lot of issue with the plant itself, except for pathing. Jeez, they have pathing issues.
Yeah, God. Dude, you have to sit on top of that damn thing. You can't use the minimap. Use the minimap. If you tell that dude to run through the middle on the minimap, that bastard will be up on the northern border spinning around in a circle. It's happened to me a few times. It's fucking annoying. My biggest complaint about the plant, though, besides its ridiculous pathing AI, is that the wrong person always gets the damn plant, and they suck. Or the right person gets the plant, but the entire team go off and they do their own little thing. And there's only one way to do the plant right, in my opinion. You got to get more than two buildings at a time with his building damage thing, and you can't do that at really well without your team pushing everybody back. If your team rolls with you and you can do that, then you'll take out a whole shitload more buildings. But the fact is you got to run up to the gate pretty much and get up against it to do that.
Well, yeah, optimally you always hit at least four structures, because you always want to drop your pod. Like if you're at the gates, you always want to drop your pod inside the gates. That'll get the two towers up front, that'll get the fort, and either the other cannon that's in there, or the moonwell. So you should always get four. The only issue with dropping it inside like that all the time is if the opposing team is on the other side of the gate, a lot of times they'll just snipe down the plant real quick. But I agree. I never had the pathing issues that I saw you have that one day, and I've seen other people look like they have. When I click to go down the middle, he always goes down the middle for me. The issue I have is when I need to say, I start to go down the middle, and I'm like, oh, the whole team's there. I'm going to cut up to the top lane or to the bottom lane, and you try to go through, like, the jungle area of the map. That's ridiculous, because there's edges and walls and stuff. It's not a straight line. Then he starts freaking out.
And there's some gold shit up in here. Reading this, you should just come by and read this. It's funny because everybody's stopping in all cat, and they just pick up the things that annoy them. Like, I'm trying to main Gazlo, and those dipshit Nova's Zeratuls are fucking with my dreams. Also, what the fuck is with those random capitalized words on the loading screens? And then it's like, damn it, Zagara Zeratul, stop using Devouring Maul Void Prison when I land my Gravabomb 3000. I mean, come on, now I gotta wait 2 more minutes for the next one. And we're all motherfucking dead because you motherfucking saved them from my motherfucking combo.
Oh, that's hilarious. Shoot me a link to that.
It's the very first post. It's like sticky eater or whatever pinned up at the top of the Reddit page. That shit, I was kind of dumb. Let's see. All right, Mike, we're going to keep it up. We're on our third week of our Hero of the Day. And earlier today, we said we were going to talk about the Protoss Ninja Zeratul. I have some opinions about Zeratul, and it's just more me whining. Basically, every time I go up against a Zeratul, I die. I hardly ever kill Zeratul. When I play Zeratul, I die. And I hardly ever kill whoever I'm taking down. Now, even though I have done some things, and you've witnessed them, I have done some things that look pretty slick, like run up there, hit them, blink, cut them off, kill them. I have done that, and those things do feel good. But it just keeps bringing me back to earlier today when I was playing as Stitches, a tank. I have full health. Zeratul has half health. And Zeratul still kills me. I've never been able to do that as a Zeratul. I feel like I'm being cheated. What is your opinion of Zeratul?
Well, the only thing I can figure that happened in that scenario is that you just didn't have the optimal Stitches talents for dealing damage. Because Stitches is not a big damage dealer. But, if you're playing him and you're expected to his slam, then you should be able to kill Zeratul. But Zeratul is a crafty-ass character. I mean, if he gets in trouble, he can always blink away. And he can blink far enough away that he can get stealth pretty quick. And if he's specced properly, when he comes back out of stealth attacking you, he'll do a hellacious amount of damage back to you again.
Yeah.
Double singularity spike is crazy.
He has a heroic where when you pop it off, he teleports to his target, and oh sweet Jesus, son, he cuts you down. It lasts 6 seconds, and when you think you're just almost away from him, he clicks it and he just chases you down. But I can't use it very good. Then he has that damn void prism skill, which it's kind of cool. But you stun everybody, but you can't do anything to them. I guess it's just a way to stop people to make sure they don't chase you down.
Yeah, it's also good for any type of timed map objective like the Dragon Knight and the plants on the Garden Terror. It stops them as well, and it eats away at their timer.
But it stops everything, right? Doesn't it stop your allies, too?
Yeah, it'll hit your allies, too.
But it makes them invulnerable, so I guess there's...
There's benefit to it. There's benefit to it, even if it's like, oh, I'm going to drop this on everybody who's here to give the rest of the people time to get here, that kind of.
All right, Mike, well, tonight it's your turn to go over the talents and the skills, so let's go ahead and blow through those right quick.
All
right,
well, I guess we'll kick it off with just his abilities.
Right.
Zeratul is a cloaked character. His trait is permanent cloak. He becomes invisible while not attacking or taking damage.
Yeah, and... what do you think about those cloaking? Do you think being cloaked might be a little OP for this game?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, they've done a pretty good job of making the cloaked characters visible enough that you can see them coming if you're watching for it. And you should always know that there's cloaked people on the other team. So I don't think it's too bad. And the only two characters that can cloak are pretty damn squishy. If you catch them before they get their opener off, you can usually drop them. Zeratul's a little more crafty because he has a better getaway than Nova, but still, if you really put the chase on him, you can usually take him out. The problem is getting caught out. They're stealth and you don't see them and they get to open up on you. Then it can be a bad time.
Alright.
Alright, his other basic abilities. First is cleave, which is an area effect damage around him. It's neat that he has cleave. It makes him, gives him a lot of utility because he can actually creep some, whereas like the other stealth character Nova is not good at doing creep at all. So cleave is pretty nice, especially when you later talent it to have like a bleed effect after you hit people with it.
Yeah, being able to hit everybody that's close is pretty jacked. And also when he does get, when it gets to the point like it's like level 20 or so, going to the mines of the haunted I don't even know what the hell that map's called now. But the one where you gotta go into the mines and get the skulls. He could kill all those dudes in one hit. So he's like, kinda like a melee version of Vala, in that he can do that pretty quick.
And his second ability is Singularity Spike. Another interesting ability. It's a ranged attack, which is nice. Basically throws a bomb on them and after, is it 1 second or 2 seconds it explodes, or 1.5 seconds. It's interesting, particularly interesting when you can talent to get two of them at one time. You can do quite a lot of damage to a hero if you throw two bombs on them.
That's pretty cool. I know you've talked a lot about it.
Yeah, it's not that strong early on. It's more of just a nuisance thing and a slow, because it does slow them. But later on, when you get to double it up, it's nice, and it does a little bit of AoE damage. So, it's useful. And his final ability is Blink, which is his bread and butter. This is his escape and his chase, all tied into one. It's a 10-second cooldown. He can teleport to a location. Has a pretty good radius, pretty good teleport radius.
Yeah, it's a frustrating skill when you're fighting against, because it always seems to be a...
Yeah, and it has a reasonably long cooldown. I mean, 10 seconds is a pretty good cooldown. But yeah, it does seem that when you're trying to kill him, he always has it.
But I sure do love being able to blink across walls and shit. Boy, those big walls of trees and stuff have always saved me.
Yeah. I guess we'll go ahead and go do the talents. That way we'll just talk about the ultimates when we get to level 10 talents. Alright, at level 1, he gets the choice. His first two choices are kind of the basic. A lot of assassins have these. Regeneration Master, every 3 regen globes gathered gives an extra plus 4 health per second permanently for the rest of the game.
Block
periodically reduces damage received from hero basic attack by 50%, stores up to 2 charges. When you're talent gated to only have these two, block is actually pretty decent. It helps you open up on somebody and then get the hell away without taking too much damage. Then he has Seasoned Marksman, gain 1 basic attack damage for every 5 enemies killed with basic attacks. This is not that great for Zeratul because he doesn't just stand there meleeing things. He tends to want to get back cloaked and get the hell out of there. He also has Greater Cleave, increases the radius of Cleave by 33%, and Rapid Displacement, reduces the cooldown of Blink by 1.5 seconds. I don't know about you, but I pretty much always go for the Greater Cleave. Get that bigger radius. Helps make sure you always
I like the bigger radius.
You want.
I go for that, or I go for Rapid Displacement. I mess with Seasoned Marksman. Seasoned Marksman's only useful if you can go down on a lane and kill minions by yourself. If your damn teammate will leave you the hell alone and the other team won't mess with you. But that never happens.
To me, Seasoned Marksman seems best suited for like an Illidan who he's focused around basic attacks. Because it is gain 1 basic attack damage for every 5 enemy kills. So on top of everything, you're still only gaining a bonus to your basic attack, which Zeratul's biggest damage dealer is Cleave. And then Singularity Spike is not so much his melee attacks.
Oh, but when you hit that ultimate, man, basic attacks are jacked up.
Yeah, but even then, that ultimate, it's still just mainly a chase, though. Because you don't do any more damage with your ultimate, you just attack faster.
Yeah. Next two.
Alright, level 4. We get an option of Focused Attack. Every 10 seconds, your next basic attack deals 50% additional damage. And basic attacks reduce the cooldown of this about 1 second, so if you're doing a lot of basic attacks, this will proc a lot more often. But again, it's not really your focus with Zero Tool to be sitting around basic attacking. Second option is Vampiric Assault. Basic attack heals for 15% of damage dealt. When you're talent gated, that's probably the one you want. That one allows you to merc a little bit. Also allows you to pop over to some creep just to heal yourself back up if you don't have a pool. Once you break through the talent gate, your next one is Gathering Power. Passively grants 8% ability power to all your abilities. And each hero that you kill also grants an extra 2% ability power, up to 12 total. And the bonus lasts until you die. Next you have Sustained Anomaly. Your spike now explodes for area damage and slows regardless of whether or not it hits a target. And the last one is Vorpal Blade. Activate to teleport to the last player you attacked within 3 seconds on a 15-second cooldown. On this tree, I tend to go for the Gathering Power. That way my cleave always does 8% more damage. My Singularity Spike always does 8% more damage. However, Vorpal Blade is an interesting talent also. That gives you even more chase ability.
Yeah. So you don't go for Sustained Anomaly?
No. No, because it doesn't buff the damage. It makes it an AoE explosion, but I don't know. To me, the other two are just way better. I don't see the need for your spike to explode even if it doesn't hit somebody. So, I mean, I guess there could be a benefit in that if you just barely miss somebody with it, but it blows up and still slows them. But for the most part, I think the Chase and Vorpal Blade are just the raw damage boost from Gathering Power is better.
Okay. Next tier.
Alright, level 7. You get the option of Follow Through. After using an ability, your next basic attack deals 25% additional damage. Rending Cleave. Cleave deals an additional 50% damage over 5 seconds. When you only have the option of those two, I always go for Rending Cleave. I like having that dot that gets on them. A lot of times you'll catch somebody and they'll just escape you, but that dot will finish them off. Follow through is not bad, but at the same time, again, that's buffing your basic attack, something you're not trying to rely on. Next is Shadow Spike. No longer decloak when using Singularity Spike, and the range is increased by 20%. Next one's First Aid. Activate to heal 35% of your maximum health over 6 seconds. And Searing Attacks. Activate to increase basic attack damage by 50% for 5 seconds for each attack. Each attack costs mana. To me, regardless, all the way around, I always take a Rending Cleave just to get that dot on my cleave.
I've seen some Zero Tool players blow up the field with Shadow Spike, man. It's like all they do is Shadow Spike, and it's effective. I mean, it's pretty damn powerful spell.
Well, I mean, it's nice that you don't decloak when using it. So there's a big benefit to that, but that's not a damage boost. That skill in and of itself isn't a damage boost. It's just a range boost.
Right.
So to me, I would rather take the, in this tree, I would rather take the Rending Cleave.
All right, now the heroics.
Okay, we have Shadow Assault, which your basic attacks cause you to charge at enemies and have a 20% attack speed bonus. It lasts for 6 seconds. Or Void Prism. Traps all targets for 5 seconds, making them become invulnerable. You are not affected. So basically, with that one, you, like we said earlier, you can trap enemies, allies, minions, mercenary camps. Everything can be trapped by the Void Prism. You can't kill the targets, but they can't move for 5 seconds. Personally, I think I would always take Shadow Assault. Once I got used to using it and how to get it to chase, to me, that's the best one.
Yeah, I enjoy Shadow Assault because sometimes you get to get it off on somebody and it's really satisfying to hit them with it. But man, that Void Prison, I've seen it wreck some fights because it really breaks up the momentum sometimes.
Yeah, and it can really hurt you on, especially that plant stage. Your plant gets locked down, that's 5 seconds, you're not getting to do anything. Especially if they lock you down early on, as soon as you spawn.
Alright, next tier.
Alright, level 13. You get Giant Killer. Basic attacks against enemy heroes deal bonus damage equal to 1.5% of the hero's max health. Spell Shield, upon taking ability damage, Gain a shield that reduces all ability damage taken by 50% for 2 seconds. Can only trigger once every 30 seconds. Burning Rage deals 10 damage per second to nearby enemies. Wormhole, for 3 seconds you can activate Blink again to return to the point where it was cast. Or Assassin's Blade, gain 25% attack damage for 5 seconds when breaking Cloak. 10% increase movement speed while cloaked. Now in this one, you have 3 good options here. Giant Killer is always good, especially if the other team has more than one tank. That 1.5% is pretty strong against tanks.
Well, Giant Killer is good to go if you've done all those talents that buff your basic attack.
That's true. If you went for those, that makes Giant Killer the obvious choice here. But if you didn't go for that, Giant Killer is still good because that bonus 1.5% damage against tanks is big because of how big their health pool is. Burning Rage is also a good choice. It's probably the least of the three that I'm going to name, but Burning Rage is not bad because that's always AoE damage that's going off. When you get up in the middle, you're cleaving, you're taking AoE damage to everybody there. Damages buildings too, and it scales with your level just like everything else, so it's not bad talent. Maybe not the best for Zeratul, but it's still a pretty good option. And the third one is Assassin's Blade. Gain 25% attack damage for 5 seconds when you break Cloak. So when you cleave out of Cloak, you've got 25% attack damage for 5 seconds. That gets added onto your Singularity Spikes that you can double up on the next tree. It also goes to your basic attacks, and you can probably get another cleave off. I can't forget what the cooldown on cleave is. But that's a pretty decent amount of damage. That's the one I usually take, is Assassin's Blade.
Yeah, I take Assassin's Blade. Wormhole looks interesting, but I just don't know if it'd be used.
It could be one of those, you blink, maybe, and you're like, oh crap, I blinked the wrong direction because I didn't notice there was another enemy there, and then blink back and maybe run the other way. I don't know. You got a 3-second window, so I guess it could be useful in that 3-second window. Say you're chasing somebody, you blink after them, and then, oh crap, there's one of their buddies is right there now, and then you blink back. I could see the usefulness of it, but to me, I would always take either Assassin's Blade or Giant Killer. And Giant Killer, definitely, when you're locked to only being able to pick from the first two.
Oh, yeah. Not that shitty Spell Shield. I hate that damn thing. Alright, next two.
Well, Spell Shield took a big nerf. Spell Shield used to be really good, and then they changed the way it works. Used to, you pick Spell Shield and you had that all the time. Like, you had, it kind of worked like Block, the Block one does this in town, in the first tree, is you would have 2 stacks of Spell Shield on you, and you'd take 50% reduced damage for 2 hits, and then it would kind of recharge back up to 2 charges. But now you have to get hit before it even activates, which is kind of crappy, and it only lasts for 2 seconds. So they nerfed the crap out of Spell Shield. Okay, moving on to level 16. Your first option is Executioner. Basic attack deals 40% more damage against slowed, rooted, or stunned targets. From the Shadows, cleave deals 30% increased damage if used while cloaked. Double bombs, after you cast Singularity Spike, you can cast a second one for free within 3 seconds. Stone Skin, activate to gain 30% of your max health with shields for 5 seconds. Or Berserk, activate to increase your attack speed by 40% and movement speed by 10% for 4 seconds. This is the one where you have a big decision to make between using From the Shadows to boost your cleave damage coming out of stealth, or to take the double Singularity Spike. Me, I always go for the double spike, because if you look at the numbers, the damage that you get out of Singularity Spike, is, to me, it's going to be bigger to drop 2 Singularity Bombs on one hero than it is to cleave them for 30% more damage when you first come out of Cloak.
Yeah, but you have to look at it like this, too. It's really hard to hit people with that damn Singularity Spike sometimes. Cleave is simple to hit people with.
True, but if you're thinking about it from the perspective of, okay, I'm cloaked and I'm running up towards the hero that I'm going to attack, say that hero is killing Creeper, even team fighting, if they're standing still, then you've got them, and that double Singularity Spike's definitely more damage. But it you know, again, that's playstyle. If you're not good at hitting that skill shot on somebody, especially if they're maybe not standing perfectly still, if they're moving around a little bit, then yeah, the cleave's probably the better choice for you. Executioner is also a good choice if you have a lot of stuns on your team. Because if you've got two characters that stun pretty regular, then that's 40% extra damage for Zeratul.
Yeah. And just think, if you did all those previous talents to buff up your basic attack, then your basic attacks do more damage than all your damn skills put together.
Yeah, and technically you could Singularity Spike and get a slow on them, and that would count towards Executioner too. Forget about that. But I don't know, for me, the double bombs is just too good to pass up on.
Alright, last tier.
Last tier, Fury of the Storm, basic attacks bounce twice to nearby enemies for 50% damage. Bolt of the Storm, activate to teleport to a nearby location. Nezrazim's Fury, Shadow Assault, grants 30% lifesteal and duration is increased by 50%. Or Protective Prison, allies are no longer affected by Void Prison. When you're talent gated, it's an interesting choice. Fury of the Storm allows you to do a little extra damage in the area around you. But Bolt of the Storm is interesting because that's essentially another blink.
Yep, that's what I went with.
Now, once you have everything opened up, of course, you're probably going to most likely choose the ultimate of your choice. The Protective Prison actually makes Void Prison a little more tantalizing if you make it to level 20, because then you can drop it on the other team and not affect your team at the same time. So it's pretty interesting. But as I always go with Shadow Assault, I think I'd pretty much always go with the Nezrazim Fury here and get the...
Nezrazim Fury is what I go with, because it makes shit jacked up.
Well, the lifesteal is nice. 30% lifesteal is nothing to shake your fist at.
Yeah. Well, Mike,
and it lasts another 3 seconds, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was all of his time. He's identified as a hard character to play on the character select screen, and I have to agree with that. He is a difficult character to play. I don't believe he's overpowered. I don't believe he needs to be nerfed. I don't believe he needs to be buffed. I think he's balanced pretty good. He's not jacked up like some of the other characters are, and he's not too weak like plenty of the other characters are. But his difficulty of play makes him, you know, if you get a really good Zeratul player, that person is going to be damn near unstoppable. But if you're just an average run-of-the-mill Zeratul player, then you're still going to be pretty badass, but you're definitely killable. But I went 35 minutes in a match where the Zeratul on the other team had zero deaths and like 40, 50 kills. I mean, he was just tearing people apart. It's a very... If you want to get your rage on, I mean, if you want to go aggro on people and you want to prove your dominance, get good with Zeratul. You'll make people hate this game.
Yeah, and it's the same with Nova. I mean, the two stealth characters have that effect on people, but you can't play the stealth characters the way you play any of the other characters. I mean, you literally... That's the reason why I was saying that the basic attack talents probably aren't the best option for Zeratul, because the best way to play both him and Nova is for you to be stealthed 98% of the time. I mean, you should be stealth, wandering around looking for that easy pick-off target. The only exception to that is maybe, you know, the other team's definitely been pushed back, and you jump a merc camp, or you clean up a push that's just a merc camp that's slamming into your walls. But other than that, you should be stealthed and just waiting to pick off that weak link, that sheep that got a little too low and wandered away from his party. That's what you're shooting for. I see people play Zeratul and they see the weak link, but he's still in the middle of all his party members, and they run in there after him. And, well, that's a dead Zeratul most of the time. Even blinking away, you usually still get stopped. So it's all about in the way you're playing. You just got to get used to that. Don't engage. You don't have to constantly engage. You're looking to catch the one that's low and retreating.
All right, Mike. Last thing on the list. you can kick one character in the balls, who would it be?
That's a tough one. There are a few that annoy me to no end when I'm playing against them. Kind of put me on the spot. I wish you'd have told me this earlier. I would have thought about it a little more in depth.
That's the beauty of it, bro. Pick one.
The one that seems to aggravate me the most is freaking Stitches. I hate getting fucking grappled back. And I am not good at doing it like some other... Like, I always play against people who are excellent at aiming that damn grappling hook. And
even better are the ones who can aim that damn grappling hook. What's even better is when they can aim that grappling hook after they get the talent that makes it double the length or whatever. It's so aggravating. If I could punch one character in the nuts, it would have to be Illidan. Because no character snipes me more than Illidan when I'm... Like, I can get away from him with certain characters. But, like, you take Malfurion or Falstad, or those characters that don't really have a good evasive maneuver, Illidan will wreck them, and it's just aggravating.
So I never had too much trouble with Illidan as Malfurion, but at the same time, I never let Illidan, like, sit in a lane by himself. Illidan benefits from that greater than probably any of the other assassins that get that seasoned marksman as a talent option. Because Illidan, like 90% of his damage comes from his basic attack. The rest of his abilities are meant more for his chasing them down. So all his damage is coming from basic attacks. Seasoned marksman, every 5 creep guys that he kills with basic attacks increases his basic attacks. On top of his talents that also increase his basic attacks. So if you let him sit in the lane and buff his basic attack, then yeah, he's a nightmare for anybody who doesn't have an escape ability. But usually when I fought him as Malfurion, if he didn't get to sit in a lane by himself, then I can usually control him good with the roots and the little Trent. And he is squishy, he has low health. And if he's chasing you and you're dropping shit on him and he's not getting a bunch of basic attacks off, then he's not going to kill himself enough. You can usually take him out. But I could definitely see if somebody, and may not necessarily be you playing Malfurion, but if somebody on your team lets Illidan sit in on a different lane and buff his basic attack up, then yeah, he becomes very infuriating.
Yeah, he's aggravating, but that's just this week. It may change next week. But yeah, we spent a lot of time playing it this week. We'll probably spend a lot of time playing it next week. Of course, school's coming up this week.
I want to change my choice. I'm going to go with Nazebo. Fuck that witch doctor.
His damn zombie circle is annoying. Okay, now, moving on from the world of video games, because I think we just talked for 14 hours about Heroes of the Storm. I was trying to come up with a way for us to talk about news, and I was tired of finding one news thing. I figured Reddit is this super website that, you know, daily changes. There's millions of people that read it. There should be millions more people reading it. But I figured I'll go to their R News subreddit and pick out some topics. Read the heading. We'll just talk about it. And I won't really read into anything. We'll just talk about things based off the topic of the post. I think that'll be interesting. And it'll be quick, nothing too super in-depth. You know, and I'm comfortable talking about this like this because this podcast hasn't really taken off, I suppose. And I won't really consider it being taken off till we get, like, on iTunes and stuff. And hopefully we'll get to do a little bit more. But until then, we're just figuring things out. And I've ordered my new headset, my wireless headset, so that should change the podcast quality a little bit. But okay, alright. So anyway, mom sues after cops tase her 8-year-old. What kind of bullshit is this where we allow our police force to just, you know, administer justice to whoever the fuck they want for whatever the fuck reason they want? Now, I'm going to click this link. Maybe this 8-year-old is on steroids. Yeah, tased. They tased an 8-year-old. I'm going to click this link to see if this 8-year-old is like one of those chicken steroid fucking eating kids that are like 1,300 pounds. But I'm just going to see. Opinionate on this while I look.
Well, it almost sounds like a Florida man tweet.
I'd laugh if this shit was in Florida.
Well, I couldn't imagine any scenario where a kid would get tased. I mean, maybe they were trying to tase the mom and accidentally hit the kid. I don't know. That's the only thing I could even possibly imagine. But
according
the thing is, we have more and more cops screwing up, and more cops are getting caught doing it. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if more and more places start putting into effect the cops have to wear the cameras, so they're held accountable. Because that definitely seems to be curbing a lot of that in the places where they've been initiated that.
Here's the gist. Phone call to the police station. 8-year-old girl has a knife. They don't want to hurt herself. They tase her. Mom's pissed. Says it's excessive force. Caused her pain. It happened in South Dakota, which is the Midwest, Florida. People were saying it's bullshit, but maybe there's a point. I mean, if the girl was dangerous, I don't know. I think they shouldn't have tased her.
Did you say it was in Florida?
No, it's in South Dakota, which is the Midwest, Florida.
Oh, okay.
Where everybody's rich because they frack a lot.
Well, it's an 8-year-old. If an 8-year-old has a knife and you're worried about them hurting themselves, if you're close enough to pop off a taser, you're close enough to just go ahead and snatch up the 8-year-old and get the knife away from him. I don't see any point where you would need to tase a child.
And speaking of fracking in North or South Dakota, Fort Collins, Colorado residents voted to place a 5-year moratorium on fracking, yet a district judge overturns it. Woo, man, I'd be out for blood, bro.
I think you need to check that judge's revenue stream.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that a district judge can overturn what the residents vote for, it's fucking ridiculous. It's like giving executive orders to judges when the only person that should have that is the president. That is ridiculous that they can overturn that shit. But at the same time, there are things that judges can and should overturn, like if you have a community of people who don't believe black folks should be able to eat pie in the same cafe as other white as people, then a district judge should overturn that. But other than that, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those where it sucks to have exceptions to the rule, but you kind of have to have exceptions for like what you just mentioned, being racially biased. But at the same time, that's another example of your vote not getting to count. If you the people of your town or city or whatever votes to put a moratorium on something, it shits in the face of the voter for somebody to be able to overturn it.
White teacher wins $350,000 in racial lawsuit. Okay.
Interesting. Where does this teacher teach?
This was in Ohio? I read about this earlier today. It was pretty interesting.
Was this a scenario where the white person in question was accused of racism and they won like a countersuit, or was
no
somebody being racist against them?
Get this. All right. Her principal, this teacher's principal, called this 65-year-old white lady, she called her poor white trash and a white bitch. But the thing is the principal, Angelique Simpson Marcus, has multiple lawsuits against her. It's not good for the school board for, Prince George's County in Ohio. Of course, the principal denied that she ever said those things. She says she doesn't use that kind of language, but she fucking lost. So that means there's something to go here. It's pretty interesting because this would be like the first major acknowledgement that, hey, guess what? White people can be victims of racism just like black people and brown people and yellow people and every other shade of color. I mean, while I think racism is ignorant, it's good to see that, you know, somebody's able to hit back after being racially, I can't think of that word. Just after they've been hated on. I'll say hated on. How does this make you feel, Marshall?
Well, I think it's good. I think that we shouldn't focus on the race of the person, just that their race was being called into some type of question or of insult. Did it say, and you may have said, not just missed it, but did it say that was the principal ethnic? I mean, what was the race of the principal?
Principal's black.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, it's not right for a white person to be racist on the job like that, and would definitely have gotten sued and would have definitely most likely lost. So it's good to see that it cuts both ways. I mean, racism needs to go away from all sides and all facets.
Next one, let's see. The NCAA must allow colleges to pay athletes. Judge rule. That's pretty big deal. Let's think about that.
Now, is that saying pay them as in like they basically have a job, salary pay, or is this a ruling on the colleges being able to give people incentives to come to their college? Because I know that was a big no-no in the past, was to try to get convince like a star high school player to come to your college instead of going to somewhere else, and you throw in either money at them or gifts.
Well, here's my thing. In the NCAA, it's against the rules for a team to influence a student's choice of college by buying them nice things and keeping them at that school by getting them a car and all that stuff. I think that's still against the rules. The idea that that athletes for colleges don't get paid, I think that's a little bit inaccurate, because if you're going to college for free to play sports, you're getting paid to play sports. And you're paid a lot of fucking money to play sports,
more or less,
because college is expensive. But I think what this is here's the issue. Tim Tebow, Florida State. How much money do you think Florida State made off of that motherfucker's name alone while he was in college? They probably sold Tim Tebow jerseys out the ass while he was going to Florida State, bro.
They probably still are.
And yeah, they probably still are. And take like RG3, the Reggie Griffin guy. They probably made a lot of money off of that Wolverine stuff that he always had. And the thing is why are colleges able to profit off of those players' likenesses? The players should get a cut of that. And I agree that the players, if a college is making money off of a jersey because you're a superstar athlete in college, yeah, you should get a cut of that money. Free paid tuition be damned. Those colleges are making enough money as it is. As a player, you should be able to reap the benefits of your name. But just an outright, here's a paycheck, stay on our team thing, I don't know about all that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I'm totally with you on merchandising, because if you're a good player, it's your name. You're the one selling that merchandise with having your name on it or your number or whatever. So I agree, yeah. I don't have any issue with them giving players a cut of that. But for them to be paid like a salary, or like it's a paycheck for them to be playing on the team, then that's basically no different than allowing them to influence where they're going to college just by buying them gifts. Because essentially what's going to happen is oh, we got Superstar Joe quarterback, and he's playing for LSU. And, man, he's super good. We don't want him to leave and go to Alabama, so we're going to pay him more. Oh, Alabama's going to offer you this? Oh, we're gonna top that. We'll pay you even more. Then you're just in the same
scenario. Believe they should be able to do that. I don't believe they should be able to do that shit.
No, they shouldn't.
Because then that's going to put colleges in the position to burn so many resources on keeping players. And you're going to see the big colleges completely obliterate the championship games. You'll never hear about certain teams ever again. You won't have any of those surprise upsets anymore. Oh yeah, here's one. Two New York infants diagnosed with herpes following circumcision with direct or genital suction. In other words, two babies got herpes because a rabbi that performed circumcision gave them blowjobs.
Sucked their little penises. Yep, that's that hardcore Jew where they feel they gotta suck the blood off.
I'm sorry. They need to move on. They've got, like, tools and instruments to remove blood. But you know what? Let's just get off of this whole circumcision kick, because it don't fucking do nothing.
I'm sorry, we really need to stop surgically altering our bodies because of 4,000-year-old beliefs. The rabbi that did this shit, or the rabbis responsible for this, they should be thrown in prison. Their religious rights should not be protected. They don't protect female genitalia mutilation. They've outlawed that. The next thing they need to outlaw is this damn circumcision. And if they just gotta have circumcision, that shit better be done in a fucking hospital. By a doctor, not a damn rabbi.
I don't think they should be doing... I think if the kid wants his pecker circumcised, it should happen when he's old enough to decide he wants it done. Not the parents do it when he's an infant. But on top of that, that's not the main issue here. We have some creepy Jewish dude sucking on baby penis. And, if you weren't some creepy Jewish dude, if you weren't some creepy Jewish dude and you did that, that would pretty much be child molestation. So why can't we throw this guy in jail?
Who knows? I guess, you know, if it's a medical procedure, he's sucking the... That's fucking stupid. I'm not even going to talk about it anymore. Let's see. Women stoned to death in Syria for adultery. That's redundant. That happens every day, I suppose. Let's see. Well, I'm looking through the list. Missouri crowd after shooting. Because in Missouri, police shot... they shot somebody. You know, that happens from time to time nowadays. Police just shooting people willy-nilly. Missouri crowd after shooting. Kill the police. Wonder how long it's going to be before the entire nation is starting to do the kill the police thing. And I don't know. You know what? I'm not even going to look to the background of it. I'm just going to assume that the police shot some dude, and because it's on the front page of Reddit, it's probably some dude who was shot wrongly or something. Most of the time when it's on the front page of Reddit, it's about somebody who got shot and they shouldn't have been shot.
And this, once again, like I said earlier, it seems to be more and more, and we hear about these things more and more, and we see them more and more, because more and more people have cell phones. We have cameras at the ready now, and people are getting to see this, people are getting to see and identify, and even put forth the evidence of wrongful doing by the police. And hopefully, we're getting to the point to where that's going to be a turnaround, and we'll start seeing less and less of this type of abuse of power.
Alright, bridal store refuses to sell to same-sex couple. Do you think that they have that right to refuse to sell to them?
Well, to me, they don't. And I could be completely wrong in saying that. Our business rights could cover them to say that they have the right to refuse service to people. But I personally think that no, they shouldn't be able to, because to me, that's the same thing as saying, this is a whites-only restaurant.
What if it was like two guys that were in there just rubbing on each other's dicks and making out and just being gross?
Well, then you wouldn't be denying them service because they're a gay couple. You'd be denying them service because of lewd behavior in a public place.
I think I'm going to just have to say that, I don't know. I don't know, man. I just don't know, because I feel like we shouldn't be able to tell the business who they can or cannot sell to. It's part of that whole libertarian kind of freedom thing. But, you know, part of getting over this whole homosexual hatred that America has is to treat them like a class of people that can't be denied services. I don't know. Next is look.
I mean, but like I said, to me, what's the difference between that and then saying, oh, well, we don't sell stuff to black people here or Mexican people here? I mean, to me, that's the same thing.
Let's see. McDonald's ordered to pay $27 million in deaths of teens beaten by mob of 20-plus. Only one suspect jailed for 90 days. I don't know what the hell that means. The hell, McDonald's sent a bunch of people after these people? What the hell? Let's see.
I don't know.
Let's see. They're going to appeal. The young men were beaten by a mob in a parking lot. So I guess McDonald's is getting sued because McDonald's didn't have any security or something to stop the fights. Let's see. Oh. Let's see. Police in College Station testified they regularly went to the McDonald's to stop fights and disperse very large crowds in early morning hours on weekends. Okay. Do you think McDonald's should be responsible for criminal activity in their parking lot? or should the police stop shooting innocent people and do their job? I know that question was pretty stacked.
I don't think, unless McDonald's was directly involved in the beatings, to me, that's more of a police issue. Unless there's some type of state statute in place that says that those type of restaurant chains have to provide some type of parking lot security. And I know that's not the case. So, yeah, I think that falls to the police.
Here's one. FCC chairman rejects Verizon's throttling defense. The wireless carrier's argument that all the kids do it isn't good enough, the official says in a press conference. So, okay. Good. FCC worked for us that time. Which I was reading up on net neutrality and making ISPs or internet service, like making the ISPs common carriers and things like that. And I was concerned. I was concerned because a while back I had read that there's two sides to this coin of net neutrality. If we get the FCC, let me identify the first thing, the bad thing. Corporations want to make the internet pretty much closed off. They want fast lanes. They want us to pay more to get certain services, et cetera, et cetera. They want to ruin the internet just like they can't get satellite TV together. And I guess part of that is because since most of the ISPs are fucking cable TV companies and they want their cable TV money back, they want to just rape the internet. All right, now, the other side of the coin is to allow the FCC to force ISPs to be called common carriers, which would in effect make them not be able to do those things. But at the same time, if you give the FCC that much power, we're giving them the ability to open the gates to legislating the internet. So you're looking at, you know, the debacle of the Super Bowl where Janet Jackson popped her titty out and showed the whole world her really bad looking pierced nipple, you know, and then TV got flipped on its ass by the FCC. Nothing's really keeping the FCC from flipping the internet on its ass with all the censorship that they want to do, you know. So it's kind of weird. I would like to see net neutrality stay and us not have to legislate it, but it's a shame that we have to go in one direction or another, because if we don't do anything, we're fucked. But if we allow the government to do anything, we're fucked again. So it looks like we're screwed either way.
Well, I haven't read up to see what the FCC's response was to them opening up their website for people to send them comments about this, about what they should do when they were looking at voting on it. But personally, I think that they can do nothing. They can tell Verizon and them, no, you can't do what you were wanting to do. We're going to maintain net neutrality, and then no, we're not going to go to common carrier either. It needs to stay the way it has been this whole time. But at the same time, I guess they do need to kind of prosecute. Well, there's a lot of ISPs who have been caught and found guilty of throttling traffic to certain websites, particularly websites that didn't want to pay them extra to have, certain speed access to their service.
Right.
We saw a graph where when Netflix was in negotiation with Cox, I believe it was Cox, either Cox or Time Warner, during the time period that they were in negotiation with them, their speeds plummeted. And then right about the time they reached their agreement, their speed shot back up. And the ability of a company to do that with the internet is just, it steps way over the line, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that was pretty much the front page of Reddit's news. Now, I've been reading this book called Divergent. And did you go see that movie?
No, I did not.
And it was an alright movie. It was pretty good. It was about as good as Hunger Games, I suppose. I've been reading this book. It's a lot like Hunger Games. Did you enjoy the books for Hunger Games?
Oh, yeah.
Did you enjoy the Hunger Games? Did the second Hunger Games movie come out yet?
Yes, it did. And it was good. I don't know if you did or not. But it was good. I liked it better than the first one.
Shit. I don't know if I saw it. I've been too busy, man. I'm frustrated. What was it about? was it? It was the one where they put them on the island and it spun around, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I saw that. All right, yeah. Divergent is about like Hunger Games quality-wise. It's another story of, you know, not post-apocalyptic, but dystopian future. The world seems to be divided into different factions, and each faction serves a different purpose in the world. And the main character is a girl, and her whole point in the story is to make choices, grow up, overcome some challenges, deal with issues like friendship, basic teenage stuff, make it through some harrowing situations, things like that. It's a young adult book, but it's got some violent parts in it. Some pretty good writing. A lot better than like Twilight. About on the same level as Hunger Games. I'm about halfway through it, and I'm gonna write an article about it after I'm done. So far, I got a little bit to say about it. It's an interesting book. Mike, have you read anything here lately, or are you just too busy?
No, it's been a while since I've picked up anything and put any time into reading. I may start searching around and grabbing me some more audiobooks, but my recent time has been spent just listening to podcasts, man. That and, well, I guess it's a podcast also, but that and some hardcore history.
Yeah, I've been listening to the Joe Rogan Experience nonstop when I can. It's just, I haven't caught up to him yet. I think I'm just about out of time, though. I think I'm running out of episodes, which, when school starts, I'll probably stop for a couple of weeks just so I can get behind again. I think I'm on the Fight Companion. Yeah, Fight Companion for July 16th. I don't know who's fighting in that one, but all those Fight Companion podcasts are pretty cool. He had one of my favorite podcasts that he had, though. He just had it. Was with, where's this guy's name? I'm trying to find this dude's name. No. Wow, I don't have this dude's name. It was an Australian guy. And, wow, you know, he has the titles of his podcasts. And,
one second, I'll read them off to you and you can tell me which one of them.
It's CJ something or something like that.
CJ?
You know what it is?
I knew you did Crash from the Float Lab. I remember you telling me about that one.
My podcast app is removing podcasts that I've listened to, so that's why I'm not seeing. So, podcast, let's see. Complete? No. Feed? No. Look, Hooker, you need to work. CJ Werleman, episode 522, July 17th. He's an Australian guy. He lives in California.
I have missed that one.
I highly suggest you listen to that one.
In order, every one to 520, and then for some reason, I don't have 21 or 22 and go straight to 23.
He is an Australian guy. Let me see what I pull up on him on the Googles. My computer is slow as shit.
While you pull that up, I'm just going to ask you this. Have you heard the one with the poker player?
No, not yet. CJ Werleman.
I think you'll find that one interesting.
Is the engaging and entertaining voice of today's new atheist. Alright, so he's a big atheist guy. Which he wasn't really pushing a lot of that on the podcast. But what he was pushing was this idea that America's fucking failing and we're heading towards catastrophe. I was about to say catastrophe, but catastrophe. Because we're a bunch of greedy fucks to the point of where we don't even care what the quality of our country is and how well our citizens are. We only care about making the rich richer. Poor people be damned. And he made a statement that had me thinking, and I put this on Facebook. I don't know if you saw it. The statement was basically, why is it that when someone brings up socialism, they automatically think about the Stalin Russia or China, and they don't think about places like Western Europe in Australia, where it has succeeded? And that had me thinking. I'm not really big on socialism, but that comment really had me thinking. You know, I believe we have room for free market enterprises, but we have got to do something about certain things. We have all this money, and we're just worried about blowing people up, and we should be able to just spend it on making people's lives better making this country better, etc. And that's kind of like what this dude was coming on about. He really didn't talk much about religion very much. Because, you know, Joe Rogan, he kind of guides discussions away from really bashing it. Even though he does bash it from time to time. But he gets to certain subjects. And this guy had a lot of interesting stuff to say about things. But he's not an American citizen, even though he lives in California. And he's pissed off a lot of people. Because, you know, he says things that are kind of like common sense stuff. You should listen to it. I won't talk any more about it. You should listen to that podcast episode because it really was fun.
Oh, I'm definitely going to. I'm downloading it now. I missed two of them somehow. That one and the one before it. But, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the reason why everybody instantly leaps to Stalin and Karl Marx and all that when it comes to communism or socialism is because it's kind of bred into us. When those things are brought up, that's anti-American. Communism is anti-American. Socialism is anti-American. That's not what we do here. And so it's immediately linked to the worst thing that anybody can think of. And those things are tied straight to Stalinistic Russia or Marxism. So I think that's just years and years of it just being, that's the way it's been put to everybody. So nobody even takes a chance to consider, well, you know, these are different people. Maybe it works a little different under this person.
All right, so he has 5 books, C.J. Werlemann does. I may have to pick one of these books up. But he has one called Atheists Can't Be Republicans, If Facts and Evidence Matter. There's one book. He has a book called God Hates You, Hate Him Back, Making Sense of the Bible, which I might would read that one. That one looks interesting.
Both of those sound like something I would read.
Then he has a book called Crucifying America, which has Uncle Sam being crucified on the cross on the cover. I'm pretty sure that pissed off everybody.
Separation of church and state. I bet that's what that's about.
I'll read this because in the little summary on his webpage, Werlemann demonstrates how the Supreme Court's ruling in the case of Citizen United has provided billionaires and corporate money an opportunity to fund resurgence of the Christian right, and how it's this radical alliance, rather than the terrorist that poses the gravest threat to our way of life. Okay, I am extremely interested in Citizens United. Anytime I see somebody write about that, I try to read it because Citizens United is the policy that was passed by our Supreme Court that allows corporations to funnel unlimited amount of money into their chosen political candidates' pockets. And it is the most insane law, and that shit is breaking our country. The next book is Jesus Lied, He Was Only Human. Pretty sure you'll be interested in that one. And, he had 4 books. I'd popped 5 open on accident. I'm gonna try to get to some of his books maybe in the future. Maybe I can find some on the internet somewhere. I'll pay for them. Sure will.
Wonder if he's got audiobook.
He might. He talks well. You know, he's Australian. Them Australians talk good. All right, Mike. Now, last week, I wrote a product review for the death-defying baby bathtub. That sounds interesting. You can go read that article. I reviewed this foldable bathtub for our baby that was a nightmare because it didn't fold up very easily and it was a bitch to clean up. And when it got wet, it was slippery as hell. We took that shit back, got our money back. Then we had our Tuesday podcast last week. This is actually our 7th episode. I don't know what we're going to do special for episode 10, Mike, but we're going to try to do something special for 10. We talked about dumb politics and we talked about my mic issues. I made you listen to that chick who was talking about how global warming was a hoax and all that. I know you enjoyed it. And what was funny is you asked me what kind of newfangled technology I used to put that down. That speech she made on the podcast, and it cracked me up because I just held my iPhone up there, dude, the whole time. And it was a pain in the ass because I had to hold the damn push-top button on the entire time. Next time I do that, I'm just going to turn on the damn, turn off the push-to-talk button thing. I wrote an article, a few things about the education system. 4 things. Yeah, a few things about the education system. Well, four things. And I discussed four really stupid things. Did you happen to skim this article by any chance?
Which one is it?
A few things about the education system. All right, so I wrote about four things.
I haven't got to that one yet, but I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, I wrote a few things about the education system, and it's basically four really stupid fucking things. The first one, I have a friend on Facebook, and I guess I won't say his name because I don't want him to lose his job. He teaches over in another district. I met him in a training thing out of all the many training things I've been to. And he wanted to buy a map, a big-ass dry erase map that would cover his entire wall in his classroom. He's a history teacher or social studies teacher, whatever. And it's $300. Well, he found it for $130, and he took it to his principal or whoever it is that was approving it for him. And they said, why is the United States split in half? The United States is in the center of the map. The damn continent of Asia is split in half. And I thought, you know, a personal story through that would be a little bit of a touch to add in there. The third thing I added was zero tolerance policies are a problem. And that's a pretty long... Well, no, actually it wasn't a long... But I had a lot of sources to cite some issues with it. Zero tolerance policies, as you know, are if a kid fucks up and does something wrong, no matter why or how or what happened, that student is going to receive some sort of punishment. And yes, all those stories you hear about kids getting kicked out of school all year for bringing a plastic gun to school, they're true. That shit really does fucking exist, and it's ridiculous. And I actually linked a pretty funny, there's this dude, I don't know what he's called, let me pull up his YouTube channel right quick. Well, I can't pull up his YouTube channel. Let's see. Here we go. Let's see. The Amazing Atheist. This is his name. And he's kind of weird. But he has a Fear the Kids video that I linked, and it was kind of funny. Because it's like we're scared of the kids. You know, I can understand being a little stricter in high school ages because they can actually do something. But, bro, this is zero tolerance for kids in, like, second grade doing shit. And it's crazy.
Wow, I haven't heard of The Amazing Atheist in a long time. You know, he lives in Louisiana.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. If he lives in Louisiana, I wonder where he lives. I wonder if we could get him to guest on our... Oh my God, Mike, now you got me wanting to contact this guy to guest on our podcast. He probably wouldn't do it. Maybe we can get some episodes in. Interesting.
Probably not. He did garner quite a good amount of YouTube fame. It's been a few years. I don't think he's near as big anymore as he used to be. He was really big when he first started out. He made just tons and tons of atheist videos and countering religious YouTuber videos and stuff like that, and he became real popular based off of that. That's where I know him from, just seeing his stuff pop up a lot. But yeah, in one of his videos he was talking about where he lives, and he lives in Louisiana somewhere. I can't remember where now. But I had sent him a message about it, and I don't think he ever got a response back.
Yeah, we may try to hit him up. Then I wrote about how schools before 1975, they chose to exclude special needs students from education. And I talk about some issues, but I don't really go into too much depth into it because you can really get your hands dirty when you talk about special ed programs. But then I highlighted the fact that, you know, private schools can exclude special needs students, and that's not really right. And that Bobby Jindal wants to privatize the education system, so that way we can just ignore these kids who have special needs. Because you know, before 1975, if you were blind or you were a double amputee or you were deaf, you had to go to a special school. You had to go to a school for the blind, a school for the deaf, or whatever. My uncle, I have an uncle who had to go to a school for the blind when he was a kid, and he had to go to Alabama. All the way from Evans to Alabama, I think. I may be wrong on that, but I don't know. He lives in Alabama now, though. But regardless, he may have gone to a school in Louisiana, but he had to go a long ways. He had to live at the school. And the last one, I talk about rubber rooms, you know, teachers that piss off the school board system. You know, the school boards in certain states, they have a hard time firing teachers because the unions have their tentacles wrapped around everything. You can't fire bad teachers. And instead of firing them, they put them in rubber rooms. They let them draw a paycheck, but they can't teach kids anymore. Basically, they're trying to drive them crazy. Again, it's just a waste of money. You know, if a teacher does something wrong and you can prove it, then fire their asses. If a teacher does something wrong and it takes you 3 fucking years to prove they did something wrong, chances are that teacher just pissed somebody off at the school board office, and that teacher don't need to be fired. They need to be in the classroom earning their paycheck. Yeah. And let's see, that was Thursday. No, that was Wednesday. Thursday, I wrote another education article. This was a freaking long-ass article. This was like almost 2,000 words. I took the Common Core and I applied the 7 deadly sins to it. And the article is called The 7 Deadly Sins Applied to the Common Core. So I cover all the 7 deadly sins and I talk about how the Common Core links to those sins. So it's pretty much, you know, everybody that supports it, everybody that's against it, everybody that don't care about it. I attack everybody from all different angles. I really don't pick a side. I do come out a little harsh against the conservative type folk because they seem to be the ones that are causing the most problems with our education system. But I do attack everybody. I attack the parents. I attack teachers and administrations and all that. I probably lose my job over it. And Friday, because I wrote such a long article on Thursday, and because we worked so hard mastering our Heroes of the Storm skills Friday night, I linked an old video of Les Claypool playing his bass guitar to Master of Puppets, and I just wanted to share that with everybody.
And it is marvelous.
Yes, it is well done. There was a friend, you remember old Josh Drake?
Yep.
There was a time back in high school he tried to tell me that Les Claypool auditioned for Metallica, but they wouldn't take him because he was way too good for him. Cracked me up. I don't think it was true, but hell, it might have been. I guess I could Google it and see, but I really don't feel like Googling it. Hey, you know what, bro? I think I'm about spent. It's 2:30, and I think I've talked about some things. Oh, I didn't tell everyone how sad I am that there's like 15 movies out right now, and I can't even go see one of them. Like, I just want to go see Planet of the Apes and Guardians of the Galaxy. But I can't even go see Lessa. Do you have anything you would like to add at the end of this podcast, sir?
Yeah, there. Just to go back to the C.J. Werlerman, there is a fifth book. There's one called Quran Curious, A Guide for Infidels and Believers, that he wrote. Just so you know.
I didn't want to talk about that, dude, because I don't want a fatwa on my head. Now we're going to get blowed up and
shit. Didn't talk about it. I talked about it.
But it's my podcast. See, now you fucked us. You're dead, I'm dead. Shit, man. You know them damn Islamists be blowing people up when you just
come at me, bro.
Well, Mike, I had an interesting conversation with you tonight. Another episode of the podcast is down. I'll probably have it ready to go in the morning, maybe tomorrow. My father-in-law's birthday is tomorrow, so we're going to be going partying, I guess. But, is that it, Mike? Are you thought out? Is all your comments out? Have you left yourself at the podcasting table? Are you spent?
Yeah, I think that's going to be it for me today.
All right, bro. Well, everybody. You know, Mike, you told me the way I end this podcast sucks. You know, just chill. But we already said that we already determined that all the cool sayings to close out on, they're all fucking taken. Just chill is too short, I guess, or it's not catchy enough. So,
well, it's not necessarily that. It's just you need to approach it better. Approach that final line a little better.
Well, I'm just going to say, look, bitches, listen to my podcast, enjoy it, come to my website, visit it. If I ever do get a sponsor, go spend your money there. And I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and if you didn't, go fuck yourself. Later, Mike.
Later, man.
My bum is on the dog, my bum is on the cat, my bum is on the phone, my bum is all alone. The rail is all alone. The man is all alone. The Swedish is all alone. My bum is all alone.
One, two, three, four. My bum is all alone. 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 Get the poo off my bum.